From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 161 with guest Daniel Parker, recorded Friday, April 14th, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everyone. What's going on, Richard?
Oh, you know, everything's working. I'm pulling in the right direction. I'm repairing machines. I'm generally getting myself in order. Must be springtime. I'm doing a little digital spring cleaning.
Cool. I'm just neck deep in security projects and IT security projects and a whole bunch of other stuff that I actually can't really talk about in any great detail.
You're saying no but, in creative ways.
It's been a very busy period of time, and appears that it will continue to be busy for a very long period of time to come.
That's a good thing. I'm starting to feel like the recession is past.
Yeah, well, that would be a good thing for sure.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's dive into our show here. It's going to be an interesting one, certainly a topic near and dear to my heart. We're talking to Daniel Parker. He lives in Washington, D.C., and he's one of the premier field engineering corps, our favorite people in some of our very, very best show, working on ServerOS. He's been in IT for a mere 11 years, just a kid. And when he's not doing work, he hangs out with his family, fishes, and watches football, which is, of course, not going on right now. So are you watching the basketball playoffs?
I try. I don't have much time for that, though. Although I saw LeBron got removed last night.
Yeah, what's up with that? The Cavs without LeBron, that's not right. Now, of course, I'm a Canadian, so I'm watching hockey, and Montreal's still in it, so nothing else matters.
I know some people like that.
That's just me.
The cup.
So, Daniel, we've had a few PFEs on in the past. What do you particularly work on? You're in the D.C. area, so I presume you're doing government work.
I am. I support the public sector. And like you said, I do the server OS, and I try to steer clear of things like Exchange and so forth, but it's hard. I help make sure they're running top-notch, help save us some tax dollars.
Now, typically, when I think government, I think you're still supporting some NT4 machines.
Not me. let me just say that. I'm actually pretty fortunate. I don't even have any Windows 2000 machines. They're on the network, but they're not ones I have to support.
Although, from an Active Directory point of view, it doesn't really matter, right? Because you can upgrade to later versions of Active Directory, even with old ADs in the mix.
You can, but that, sometimes things don't go as they should.
Right. Well, and I always think that the infrastructure there's got to be huge. Is it one great big federated set of forests out there, or are they all little islands?
Between the agencies, islands.
Yeah.
Now, you know, some agencies are trying to make it one great big happy family, but that's always easier said than done.
Oh, absolutely.
But where I'm at now, everything's islands, and that's kind of how it is.
And then, of course, there's a whole security side of this thing. I did enough work with the military where they literally run two network wires, one for classified, one for unclassified, and only one NIC per machine. Like, that's just an interesting world to live in.
It definitely is. It presents lots of unique challenges.
So we're talking about Linux and Active Directory today, which is something I've done. Why are you dealing with this?
Well, it's funny. So people think because you work for Microsoft, you don't ever have to deal with Unix or Linux machines.
Yeah, what is this L word you speak of?
You know, they tell me it's evil, but, you know, there's a time and a place for everything. But currently in my customer, they're actually integrating it into the environment. I got there just a tad too late because they actually went out and purchased some tools to help them do it, which gives them some additional functionality. But I don't know if they actually evaluated the whole process and procedures that's needed to see what they actually are wanting to achieve. So I thought that'd be a good topic for us to discuss.
Absolutely. And you know what? Somewhere around here, I have the book that I referred to years ago to make Active Directory and Linux work together, because it wasn't that tough. Because at the bottom level, isn't Active Directory just Kerberos?
Well, it's an LDAP directory, which uses Kerberos. Of course, in the Windows world, it can fall back to NTLM as well. But it's not difficult to set up. It's just which way is right for you. And because, you know, now, like government or even private business, you want to have things as secure as possible. So you probably don't want to pass your credentials in clear text.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's one, but it's also just what services are we trying to get access to? So what's a Linux box doing for your customer, if you're allowed to talk about that, that would need to connect Active Directory to it?
So I don't know exactly what the Linux boxes are doing. I can speculate. I don't really get into those details with them. It doesn't matter to me. But the reason that they want it is for management. They don't want people logging into their Linux boxes on each box is a silo, so everybody's root.
Right.
Essentially. So it comes down to management of users and resources.
So is this really just a single sign-on problem more than anything?
Yeah. And well, single sign-on along with accountability.
To the audit trail as well.
Exactly. Because, you know, nobody wants you to use shared accounts. And if you're using a shared root account and every Linux and Unix box has a different root password, possibly.
Right.
I mean, and you have 10 people that have those passwords. How do you hold anybody accountable?
I mean, it's like having a bunch of Windows 98 or a bunch of workgroup machines that are not joined to an Active Directory or domain sitting out there as individual machines, right?
That's exactly right. So they already have, I mean, and everything's in place to have the authoritative directory there, so you might as well use it.
So what does it look like when you actually take a Linux infrastructure and attach it to an Active Directory infrastructure? What does it look like from an administration standpoint, and what's the functionality that I do get versus the functionality I don't get that I might be used to on a Windows, you know, with the Windows environment?
So from a Windows point of view, nothing changes, unless you, depending on how you do your configuration. But from like a general Windows admin, yeah, it's all the same. It's all users and computer accounts that you see in there, really. And from the Linux side, instead of logging in locally with the user account, you're hitting a domain controller, and it's all transparent. Nobody really notices any difference.
Now, the big thing that I recall was that I actually had to sort of map out what a given role from an AD perspective meant in the Linux box. So there was sort of there was a file somewhere, and I'm really scratching old memories here. Must have been 10 years ago that of how I wrapped these rules out.
Now, you got to forgive me. I'm not a Linux admin. I don't remember all the file names, but I know that you can control access to the Linux systems. There's a file. I can't remember the beginning of the file, like a something.deny file where you can control access to who can do what on the system and so forth. Who can log in, for example.
Right.
So you can definitely still do that. And, you know, one of the benefits of Linux is you can completely script everything to make everything somewhat manageable, I guess, as far as that goes for that configuration.
Now, there's a few different layers here as well. I mean, it's one thing to just be able to log into the box. I mean, is that what people really want to do? They want to get to the shell of the Linux box with their existing credentials? Or is it more of I'm using the Linux box like a file server and I want access to files?
From my experience with why people use Linux, typically they're running Oracle databases on it.
Ah, so it's the big O.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, to be honest, that's primarily where I've seen Linux boxes in an enterprise. That's usually running Oracle. And of course, you have a lot of folks who still run Bind. And anytime you have anything that's touching the enterprise network and security is a concern, you want to have a good way to manage who's getting access to those resources. I'm sure there's other resources out there people use that are more often, but that's my experience.
Yeah, and the funny thing here is you can get Oracle for Windows as well. Like, why would you go through this pain?
Well, old habits die hard. Some people are still steadfast that performance is much better on Linux. Some people are just Oracle diehards. Some are just Linux diehards. I mean, there's various reasons. Some people just don't like SQL. I mean, it's hard to say.
Yeah, well, and believe me, I don't have a problem with Oracle per se. I've dealt with enough installations of it one way or the other. I would rather use SQL Server, but I've seen plenty of apps that were successful with Oracle products. But I've also seen them on SCO or Linux or NT, and it didn't matter. The OS is not a big deal in this equation.
No, and so it's really a perception issue. Years ago, it may have been an issue. So I've dealt with, before Microsoft, I dealt with Oracle on Windows. I dealt with Oracle on Linux. And there was a perception that you couldn't get the performance gains out of Windows that you would out of Linux. The overhead of the GUI and so forth was the big claim.
Right.
Now, problem was people weren't taking real benchmarks on that.
Yeah. Well,
and, so you had a lot of people go that route, and now they've got those systems ingrained that it's hard to pull them out if they want to migrate.
And there is not an easy migration path to move from Linux to Windows.
Yeah, it's not trivial, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for
depending
sure.
Depending on the role that the Linux server's doing.
And so typically, if you've just got a Linux box running Oracle like that, what kind of permissions do I need in that box to be able to utilize it?
Well, so it's like anything else. I mean, it's like Windows. So if you have a Windows box running Oracle, I mean, you're going to want to lock down your OS. You're going to want to lock down your database. Same thing on the Linux side.
Right.
And it's all, you know, ones and zeros at the end of the day. So you're gonna treat that box just like you would any other box.
But you're not, you don't actually need disk level access to that machine. You don't need root access to that machine. You just want to be able to communicate with Oracle and make your queries.
That's correct.
Now, are you able to do that sort of the same sort of thing we do in SQL Server, that shared login going all the way through to Oracle so that my AD creds actually get me into the Oracle system itself?
I'm not an Oracle guy, but I have seen that.
I mean,
you don't have to use local accounts for Oracle. You can delegate that out.
Yeah. So now you're talking two layers, one layer of getting through the firewall or the security of Linux itself, and then actually propagating that into this application that is Oracle.
Yes. And let me tell you from firsthand experience, that's difficult.
Yeah.
There's a lot, because when it goes wrong, there's a lot of troubleshooting that has to take place to try to isolate where the issue's at. Because when you have a project like that, you'll have Oracle DBAs, you'll have Linux admins, you'll have Windows admin, and let's be honest, none of them are ever going to agree where the problem's at.
Right. Well, they do all agree. They just agree that it's not their problem.
That's true.
All right.
So that's probably one of the biggest challenges.
Yes, just a number of different people involved in this whole process.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of times Linux guys don't understand Windows. Windows don't understand Linux, and Oracle DBAs only know databases. That's the perception.
I mean, that's pretty much the way Richard and I operate, right? I mean, if we don't agree on something, then Richard's wrong, and that's just the way it is.
Right.
So does that wait a minute, does that make me Linux or does that make me Windows?
I think you're Oracle, actually.
Oracle actually owns Linux, a form of Linux now too.
Yeah, they do, don't they? Well, they own Sun. So what is that?
Oh, that's right. That's right. I can't speak about Sun a whole lot. I've tried it, and it's not for me. I'll leave it at that.
Really?
Yeah. I got used to Red Hat, so I'm a Red Hat guy. If I mess with any Linux, it's going to be Red Hat.
Yeah. I know what you mean, and it's certainly familiar for me as well. Though I think I've got a Mandrake installation floating around somewhere, which just dates me instantly, and I think I still have one Debian as well.
Debian, I've tried Debian. It's not bad. I have a Ubuntu loaded up now. They just did a 10.04 release, and you know, it's got a nice front end on it.
Yeah, I've always thought that was more of a workstation incarnation of Linux.
Yes, it is.
So I understand that we can make Active Directory work against Linux without any tools. It's just a pain in the butt.
It can be, yes. And from the Windows point of view, there's really not a lot of work that you have to do to make it work. It's there because, you know, it's going to be using Kerberos authentication, which we use out of the box.
Right.
On the Linux side, the problem is you have all these different modules or applications that you need to install. And then, you know, depending on the version of the app, it may or may not work. So if you're not real good with Linux, you may run into some issues.
And you make the point here that basically it's Linux conforming to Windows rules around LDAP and Kerberos, not the other way around.
I wouldn't say conforming to Windows, conforming to RFC standards. So before Microsoft went to completely supporting Kerberos, NTLM was the way to go.
Right.
And out of the box, Linux obviously doesn't support that. That's a Windows implementation.
Mm-hmm.
And before Kerberos picked up the force that it has now with all the standards, you know, it wasn't everywhere. So to get the two boxes to talk, it was virtually impossible. Now that they both share that common platform of Kerberos, it makes tying the two that much easier. Because LDAP, again, it's another standard that we both conform to, that Microsoft and the Unix and Linux world do.
But there are third-party products you can buy to sort of ease this as well.
Absolutely. And actually, my customer, they purchased the Quest Tools.
Oh, right.
I think that used to be called Ventella. I don't know.
The old Ventella. Quest Authentication Services, they call it now.
But so they bought Quest, and I looked at those, and it was, I'm not going to lie, it was pretty impressive. It made it really easy to get it working. And then when you go look at the back end of how they're doing it, you just kind of laugh. You're like, wow, that's it.
Well, and this is mostly about putting a GUI over top of what it takes to make all these different bits and pieces work.
Exactly. So when you look at the GUI on the Microsoft side, all they're really doing is exposing the attributes that are already there. So they're making them visible in users and computers. Kind of like if you install services for Unix, it's a similar tab with the same types of information.
Right, because this is something that Windows has in it, is these services for Unix.
That's correct.
But does that help with Linux as well?
Well, yeah. So that again goes back to how do you want to configure your Linux environment to authenticate?
Right.
Because in the services for Unix, they want to use NIS, which is inherently insecure. And, you know, you could set it up that way and it will work. It'll pull your group membership, right, all that good stuff. It'll work, definitely. And you can secure it with SSL and so forth.
But it sounds like you don't recommend that method. It's NIS rather than just going to LDAP and Kerberos.
Right. That's how I would do it. That's the easy way to do it, though.
Really?
LDAP and Kerberos. For me, it is. You use Winbind.
And what's Winbind all about?
Winbind is part of Samba. It gives you the interpretation, basically, between the Linux and the Windows environment.
Okay. And yeah, and Samba, wasn't that really about file sharing?
It is. And, you know, it works. I've had some glitches with that before, but yeah. My main issue with the whole Linux integration, if you update your stuff, your applications, it may not work when you're done. That's been my experience.
You update the version of Oracle, that kind of thing?
Well, update my version of, say, Samba, for example.
Right.
Or I'll do a PAM upgrade, so the newest version. So in 2008 R2, out of the box, we don't support DES and triple DES encryption anymore. So a lot of the older installations of Linux, or even some of the newer ones that just aren't running the current binaries, aren't going to support, you know, AES encryption. So therefore, as soon as you introduce your 2008 R2 box, your whole authentication mechanism just broke.
Wow.
If they're still using DES or triple DES.
Which they probably
are.
Which
is not uncommon. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And so then you basically go back to the 2008 box and reinstall DES and triple DES, or do you force the others up to...
Well, you don't have to reinstall 2008, so it's just a simple policy change.
Oh, I see.
That you can just enable it, or you could go to your Linux boxes and upgrade them to support that.
To support AES.
Yes.
So now you're getting me, Daniel. I get it, right? Hey, this is the challenge, right? Is who are we moving here? Because I appreciate the idea that DES has been largely defeated, but putting AES on all of those Linux boxes is not going to be easy. It might be much easier to just go in my R2 box and allow triple DES again to work.
That's correct.
So,
and in fact, I'm sure most customers will do that initially until they have a good plan of how they're going to address that on their Linux environment.
Push themselves up to AES.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough one, because really you end up pushing that back to a business case. And it's a subtle one. I think most business people aren't going to appreciate the vulnerability of one encryption protocol over another. Like, it's not, there's no easy way to explain that.
No, and if you take that to an executive, they're just going to look at you like a deer in the headlights. Yeah. You're going to be like, what? Is it encrypted? Yes. They're like, we're done then.
Yeah. Well, not quite, because there's a few different flavors of encryption, and they have various exploits, and yeah.
Exactly. So, for example, in the federal space, they're all about keeping it as secure as possible.
Right.
And, you know, there would be a lot of talk how to make it happen if you do this. How do you bring your Linux environment up to support, you know, the AES encryption, for example?
Right.
So it's definitely a challenge.
Yeah. As you can make the policy change in a minute and have it work. But upgrading to AES, yeah, you've got to go find the piece of software. You've got to tinker with it and get it configured correctly. And there's different sets of rules around AES as well. So actually getting the AES certs to match well is going to be a problem.
Well, I'll give you an example. So I was actually going through this, and I set my encryption to use AES by default. So it was a clean install.
Right.
And I was like, well, let's just test this and see how well it works on a clean install of a Red Hat installation. It was 5.3, I think it was. And AES out of the box didn't work. In fact, I actually locked myself out of my Linux box. It wouldn't let me log in.
I don't trust you anymore.
But, I mean, that was the whole purpose, though. I wanted to see how would it act.
Right.
So, because out of the box, it had DES and triple DES first in the list of trying to authenticate. So I was like, well, let's do AES first. And it didn't like that.
Really? So switching it. So the simple thing, it did have AES on the list. You just changed up the order to do AES first.
Yeah.
And that didn't work.
Yes. So I went out and did an update. I grabbed some new binaries, and that fixed it. But I would have assumed, being a Windows guy, out of the box, and I just downloaded it from the web, that, you know, it would have current binaries.
Right.
I was incorrect.
Yeah. Interesting. And this was not necessarily a configuration setting of AES. This was a different implementation of it.
Yeah, so it's not even an implementation of AES. It was how PAM was configured to handle that.
Hmm. Yeah, this is tricky, especially for a group of Windows people who are just trying to make a Linux box work.
It is. So, yeah. I mean, even in the PFE world where I'm at, to find people who understand the whole integration piece of it, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, we all get Kerberos and we get all that. But when you have to start working with the Linux guys to see why it's broke, it becomes a challenge.
Yeah. Well, and I think the level of understanding for most folks on encryption ends at the acronym.
That's true.
Right? I've got AES. What more do you want from me, man?
Very true.
Yeah.
It is complicated, dirty stuff to get down into.
So what other pieces are we talking about here?
So there's a couple of moving parts on the Linux side that you can use. You have like the Samba/WinBind. You have PAM. You have NSS. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can do this. You can bring SSL into the fold. You can use services for Unix on the Windows side to help map that stuff out. There's just a lot of moving parts depending on how you configure it. For example, you have to somehow map your Unix users to your Windows users. How do you do that? There's methods that you can do it. Some are better than others. So you really have to spend some time engineering a real solution in order to understand in large environments. I mean, if we're in an environment that's only got, you know, a dozen Linux servers, it's not a big deal. But if you got 1,200 Linux servers, that's a whole other challenge. You really got to spend some time, whether you do a COTS application like Quest, or you just use the built-in features with the open source on the Linux side.
What in your experience is the most cost-effective way generally to do this? And, you know, maybe you could sort of cage that in the context of, you know, if you have X number of machines or users, then maybe you ought to be thinking about, you know, going one route. But if it's over a certain size, maybe you're going a different route, I can imagine. The risk seems like it would be that by trying to solve a compliance or an audit problem, you know, or one kind of management problem, that you could really end up creating some other pretty serious management problems if you don't do this the right way, given your particular, you know, situation.
And you're right. So the most cost-effective, it really, I hate to say it, but it really depends. If you're in a small environment, I don't think it's cost-effective for you to go get a third-party tool. That's me. I mean, like I said, small being, you know, if you have 100 servers total, it's probably not real cost-effective. You can script a lot of that on a small set of servers like that. If you've got, you know, several thousand servers that are globally dispersed, that's different. There's a lot of factors into what's considered cost-effective in management. By using Quest, you know what the patches you're getting should not break your system. If you're using, for example, a Red Hat satellite server, now that shouldn't break your system, but it may break your configuration, because, you know, there's no consistency across the configurations there, if that makes any sense. Because everybody can do things differently. Whereas in Quest, I mean, they give you a limited scope of how you can administer that stuff, and you get what you get, basically. So the cost is difficult to say without having a full list of requirements and so forth.
I guess when I think about things like, you know, scripting, and then if environment grows, or if I think about, I haven't messed around with Samba too much, you know, lately, but in the past, but, you know, you can get pretty deep into that and get kind of lost, and it can
be. You can.
Has a bit of a reputation for being difficult to set up, administer, and manage, right?
So, I would agree. Depending on what you're trying to do with it, it's kind of like SendMail. To get mail to flow through SendMail, okay, that's easy. But if you really want to dive into the real config file, the thing's how many pages long. Yeah, it can definitely be overwhelming.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it goes back to the skill set of your employees, too.
That makes sense.
I've worked with some Linux engineers who aren't big Perl scripters, so a COTS application is perfect for those guys. I've worked with some that are just, they're magnificent, and they've managed 1,000 servers with only a couple of people, and it's been truly amazing at how well they ran. It's because they had clearly defined processes as well, though.
If you've got 1,000 Linux servers, you have a bunch of Linux admins. And other than just figuring out how to get along with those guys, you know, you're going to be able to work it out. I got to think the toughest scenario is I have a Linux box or a couple of them in a basically Windows world, and I only have Windows skills. How do I make this work?
Yeah, for something like that, I would definitely go with the COTS application, right. Personally. I mean, it's difficult to train a Windows guy to be a Linux admin. Especially if they don't want to learn it.
Right.
That would be very difficult. I think you'd be asking for disaster. So that goes back to you have to weigh the risk.
Now, do you run in, I don't know if you've run into this in your particular scenario, where Linux people perceive Windows as hopeless and just have no interest in trying to figure that stuff out. Their answer to any problem here is go get a real operating system.
Actually, I run into that quite frequently. The last time I ran into it, though, was actually with some Sun folks. But then they told me what version of Sun they were running, and I just kind of laughed at them because they said Sun 7. I'm like, and you're laughing at me? My OS isn't yeah. How old? Sun 7? 15 years old or more?
Wow, yeah. You're running the Windows equivalent of NT351.
Exactly. So I'm like, nah. But that's a difficult conversation without offending anybody. But yes, that's not uncommon to hear that, well, if you take the GUI away from a Windows admin, what can you do? Well, there's still a lot you can do.
Yeah, and I feel like that's starting to change now with Core and PowerShell as well. But it's funny how much that one element colors the perception of Linux people.
You're exactly right. So Core's made a huge step. I was excited to see that we released Core because, you know, I'm a fan of the command line. I work faster that way. So I thought that was terrific to finally be able to do that. And I think as people start using that, people will start becoming more and more familiar with it. And it'll dispel the perception that's out there from, you know, the Linux guys and the Unix guys.
Yeah, I find I just take them out for barbecue, you know? Let them eat meat.
Beer works too.
Yeah, and they'll all get along better. You know, nothing like some good food. Maybe we got to do a show on the psychology of making IT teams work together. That especially when you have these.
I'll be up for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's a sort of
that sounds good. To
you
me.
Deal with these rival technologies, and the first thing I do is get them out of the office and get them at around a table where you can just talk for a while because so much of the pain is the same, and actually we are trying to deliver results.
And it comes down to communication.
Yeah, it really does, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. I mean, it's not impossible to make them work. And in fact, it's, like I said, it's rather easy depending on the solution.
It's about putting the right people around the table with each other a lot of the time. That's a lot of the consulting that I've done over the years is improving the quality of IT teams. You know, and that's not a technology thing. That's a people thing.
That's exactly
95% of the time.
And you know, I see it from both sides of the fence, though. I see, you know, Windows guys not liking Linux guys and vice versa. And that's sad because, you know, everybody's here for a reason. I mean, you know, we're all here to work together. And whether it's in the corporate world or the private sector or the public sector world, we're all here to support our customers and the people we work with.
Yep, that is the goal in the end.
And ultimately, if you can't get along, then sorry, but go somewhere else.
Yeah, this is less of
gotta draw a line somewhere.
This is interop really is less of a technology problem and more of just a plain old understanding problem.
That's true, back to the Windows guys don't understand PAM, they don't understand NSS, they don't understand any of that, and the Linux guys they might understand LDAP, but they'll come back saying, well, Microsoft likes to do their own implementations of LDAP and just break it so that we can't conform, and there's a lot of naysayers out there. And it's just a matter of communication, setting everybody straight so that everybody understands what's there, what's not there.
Yeah, and it is a question of, is that ever true? I mean, Microsoft does do their own implementations of things, but they seem to comply with the standards most of the time.
That you're exactly right. So for this, I mean, we obviously comply. I mean, we're Kerberos compliant, or you couldn't make this work. I mean, it just wouldn't work.
Right.
So, and we're LDAP compliant. Do we extend on that? Absolutely. that's why so many organizations run Active Directory, because we've extended on it and we made it that much better.
Right.
So
yeah, Active Directory does seem to have largely won in the marketplace in terms of the sort of generalized directory services for enterprises.
Yes. Now, I've personally tried to stand up and use some open LDAP solutions, open LDAP, for example, and you know, the underlying and the underneath the hood is the same, but to make it work in a large enterprise presents quite a few challenges.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, replication, I haven't looked at it for a while, but replication was a huge challenge. So, yeah.
Yeah. Replication isn't fun in games in the Active Directory world either.
No. In a large organization, when it breaks, it's difficult to track down.
Yeah, it could be terrible pain.
Yeah. Breaks.
We won't go there, though. That's in a whole other conversation.
All right. Guys, we're just about out of time. Any sort of final words around Linux and AD?
I encourage people not to be scared of it. I mean, it's not as bad as it thinks. Just talk to the Linux guys, and the Linux guys talk to the Windows guys. There's lots of resources out there. You just got to pick out the good stuff and know what's valid.
And if you're just a Windows guy dealing with Linux, get some help.
Exactly. Don't be scared of it. That's the big thing.
Daniel Parker, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, guys. You have a great day.
Thanks, Dan.
We'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.